can. Now, kids, we're gonna do a little Q&A, Oprah style. And so I'll just, you know, come around and you'll say a question, and then we have some more music for you, and then we can just socialize, okay?
Yeah.
All right, who's got a question? Raise your hand. Oh, come on, I just heard all of you singing.
All the way in the back.
It's harder because when I write my songs, I just write about whatever I want to write about, say whatever I want to say, but this has to be shaped, sculpted, you know, emotionally, and has to fit. The characters are all different, so it really is, it's harder, but it's also wonderful because it's like an imaginary world, and that just is so freeing in a way. Yeah, that's a great question. I remember you doing those Topekas. Thank you. Thanks for being here tonight. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. All right, who's next? This is Elizabeth Fleming. And then Marie, you got one to hang out for me.
Straight male fans.
Thank you.
I've been listening to you and going to your concerts for 31 years.
Thank you.
Along with Bruce Springsteen and Cat Stevens, you're my top three favorite songwriters. And I taught myself to play acoustic guitar by playing your songs. My question, two-part question. What's a song that you love to play, but it never gets to make it into the set list? Or what's a song that you would love to take a break from, but you find that you have to play it in the set list?
I'm gonna answer the second part first. We never play a song we don't wanna play, ever. A song like Galileo, we play it every night, and a song like Closer to Fine, we play every night, but like Closer to Fine, someone sings like the third verse, or they sing the song like the wonderful gentleman who bought a raffle ticket. It makes every night different from the one before, so, but we make a fresh set list every night, and we never sing anything we don't feel like it, so even though, you know, some of them we sing over and over again, but most of the set, we try to mix it up every night, just to keep it interesting for our own selves. And what's a song I'd love to sing that has never made it in the set?
Or that you'd love to do it more.
Like Bury My Heart at Wounded Knee. But we don't do a ton of covers because we have just we've made songs of our own. What's it? Oh God, he wrote that in high school. So thanks for the questions.
Thank you.
Elizabeth Fleming.
Mine's along the lines of what you said. I wanted to know, what is your favorite musical song? And then I've heard you say in interviews that some songs make you cringe, that you wrote years ago, that you're just like, you want to vomit over. So I would wonder if you would share some of those cringe-worthy songs that you don't like.
I wrote a song called High Horse, the worst fucking song ever. I mean, I beat that metaphor to death. And so we don't play that. Y'all probably don't even know it. I think we've been doing it for a long time. It's awful. Sorry. are some songs where I, well, there are a lot of songs where I wish I'd written a line differently and later on, but, and there's one song, probably not the only one. You know how Yogi Berra always messes phrases
yes.
up? Okay, so I do that too, and in Hammer and a Nail, I changed the lyrics because I got the phrase wrong. I couldn't remember if it was green behind the ear, or red behind the ear, or green, or, and I did it wrong. So on the original version, if you know those lyrics, you'll see it is wrong. So I changed it, now we sing the new lyrics. Favorite song, I don't really have a favorite. I love of the song that we just sang, it's newer, so it's, and then of Amy's songs, well, I like all her songs, but I love singing Shame on You because I love that line. I think we were on the same boat. Love that line. So, I mean, Amy, she's an amazing songwriter, and she's like a whole other musical life for me. So if it were just me doing this, I was scared to do this tonight, y'all, because I'm afraid of, whatever. Therapy, where's Murray? We'll talk about therapy
all night. I'll get to you in a second.
Let's have three more questions, and then we got a little more music.
I have a question. So what is it like to build a story in a song versus a story in a music?
Okay. Beth and Marianne are writing the story of the musical. I cannot do that. I do not have like a long vision. I just don't have that aptitude. So I just work on the songs. And Beth does this, because Beth is super smart, thinks really fast, can make changes. This happens a lot in rehearsals. I feel like, can you change these words, blah, 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 can you do the G sharp instead of the blah, blah, blah. And I cannot catch up to her. And I know I frustrate you sometimes, because you like, you have a great idea, and I'm like, I'll get back to you tomorrow. And you have to make quick changes in this process, so, I forgot why I didn't start to talk about that, but anyway. What was the question? Oh, the song versus the story. Yeah. Yeah. Like, I'm an avid reader, and I'm always blown away when I read a good novel and have someone who put that from start to finish together and stretch it out. I like 3.5 minutes. My brain can handle that. Good question, though.
So, Murmuration Nation was a beautiful album. And Crazy Side is my absolute favorite Emily song. Have you thought about doing another solo project?
Liris Hung, who plays violin with us, is amazing. She produced that album, and we talk about it. But man, from the first time I mentioned doing an album, a solo album with her, I think it took us like 3 years to actually start working on it. And right now, I'm working on 3 different musicals, and then Amy and I, we still have our day job and stuff. I think I'd like to, but I'm not in a hurry and I don't feel any pressure. I would really like to make a solo album and not do like a verse chorus type songs, but do much more like stream of consciousness and just be free in that way. And sort of like a lot of times you like create and you're like, okay, do this next, and I'd like to be using it a little more free and a little weirder.
All right, last question. I'll go up to this person.
Here we go. Come on up here.
Yes. Oh my God, yay. Thank you.
How are you?
Good. Hey, so I love you and loved you since I was like 11 years old. You're my absolute favorite. I played Hammer and a Nail solo on stage at my high school graduation.
You probably sang the wrong words.
You did probably cut me off before I got to that line, but it was still a really important thing for me. And one of the things I love the most about you is how overtly and proudly political you are, and that's not something you've ever shied away from. And that's helped me to work in politics, work in social impact, and everything that I do in my life. You were a root for me. And I wonder how you have the courage to do that, especially when you started, and if you wanted to have a music career, you wanted to be a professional in this space. And that's really risky to do. And I've always just really admired you for your music, but also even more for that. So I wonder if you have any comments on that.
Okay, thank you. First of all, although we came from different families, Amy's parents were more conservative than mine, and she talks about this in the documentary, so, you know, a deal that. But we were both reared to believe that we are members of community, that we don't live in isolation, that we're connected to other people, and so Amy and I just grew up being concerned about things that were going on with other people around us, particularly in our communities, and then out of that we realized how easy it was to get to have a benefit concert and bring all our friends together. And early on we did some for the Women and Children's Home, where we lived, and it was just like a way to, because music galvanizes us, because our spirit's going, and it was just a way really to expand out from a personal place where we're all concerned about some of the same social issues, and then play music and everybody has a good time and you can raise awareness. And then it just got bigger as we came across mentors. I would say that everything we ever learned about grassroots activism we learned from indigenous mentors. Involved for many years with a group called On the Earth. But when you talk about the risk, it doesn't feel risky to us, or I should say we have never concerned ourselves with any of the repercussions of risk, because it was always just so much more important and freeing to be involved in things that matter to us. And we know that there were other people who wanted to be involved with those things as well, and that music was the connecting force. So I just think that the only way that change is ever made is if you take your seat, not sit down, but claim your seat at the table. And I know the political system is particularly a two-party system, but don't get me started on that. It's rough, but I want to encourage everybody to vote, even if you hate the system. But even if you think about a lesser of two evils, like the bigger evil, like you can sort of see the curve of history in front of us in this country. So, boy, I'm getting on a tangent. All I mean to say is our activism came out of a very simple desire to be community members and do what we can at the table. Thank you.